I'm Dave DeWitt. This is Tested from WUNC, a daily look at how North Carolina is dealing with COVID-19 and what we're learning about ourselves in the face of a global crisis. Today, state versus federal.
Respirators, ventilators, all of the equipment, try getting it yourself. We will be backing you, but try getting it yourself.
That, obviously, is President Donald Trump. He was speaking on a conference call with governors 3.5 weeks ago. That directive sent a pretty clear message to states then: you are on your own. It was driven home last week in the now infamous comment from Jared Kushner, advisor and son-in-law to the president, about the federal stockpile.
And the notion of the federal stockpile was it's supposed to be our stockpile. It's not supposed to be state stockpiles that they then use.
Now, this is a podcast devoted to covering the North Carolina and community-level responses to the COVID-19 pandemic. But it's hard to ignore the federal response, or at least President Donald Trump's daily claims about the federal response, because it directly impacts the position our state is in. Here's Mike Sprayberry, the Director of Emergency Management, on Monday, describing how states are forced to bid against each other and against other countries.
Currently, we're working very hard to call vendors and manufacturers so that we can stock up on supplies and equipment. I think the problem that we're seeing has been not just in our state, but also locally, as well as nationally and internationally.
So let's start there with Rose Hoban, editor of North Carolina Health News. Beyond state officials, healthcare workers on the front lines are also affected by the federal response. And they watch those daily press briefings from the White House, like so many of the rest of us.
I guess the most forthright someone has been one person who was organizing the response at their institution who said to me, quote, "I'm not sure I want to make political statements," but then went on to say, "How can, in a government that's thinking of trying to send someone to the moon again and send people to Mars, how is it we can't make swabs, simple swabs to put up someone's nose to get a sample, and we can't make something as simple as a mask?" And continued by saying to me, "I will leave to you your comments on the appropriate failures of our national government to provide those for us." So, you know, of course, in asking this question of me, you're putting me on the spot too, Dave. And I kind of feel like no matter what I say, I'm going to be in for criticism. So first off, how about you? Are you willing to make an editorial comment?
Well, I get criticized a lot anyway on that note and others. But to that, I would just say I've talked to a lot of people as well, mostly sort of on the lawmaking side. And on and off the record, I have not had anybody say to me that they support what the federal government has done wholly or even in part. How's that?
Well, and I will say the record shows that there have been a lot of promises that have been made on the fly that haven't been fulfilled. There's, you know, been promises around availability, mass testing, the number of ventilators, statements made about the potential number of cases, hospitalizations, deaths. You know, all this stuff's been disseminated, creating expectations that haven't been fulfilled. And then sometimes I see it in my comments section, right? Mm-hmm. You and I have talked about this before, but, you know, I find some of the statements about hydroxychloroquine have been one of the most troubling things. I guess in part because I have a close acquaintance with lupus, who's now unable to get her medication. This is a medication that has scientific data behind it that's helped her for years, but she can't get it because people are hoarding it and directing it to COVID patients based on data that are equivocal at best. Mm. And, you know, again, along those lines, what I hear privately from healthcare people is this, you know, they're saying, well, every day these days, everybody's a freaking public health professional having obtained their degrees on Google. And it's frustrating to them. Like, why the hell did they spend years in grad school and decades of healthcare practice and study for some TV commentator with an agenda on either end of the political spectrum who spouts off and undermines their knowledge and credibility? You know, I wish science weren't such a battlefield. And I find the manipulation of data exceedingly troubling. You know, and also the rush to reach conclusions. You know, you can do good science pretty quick, but you can't take shortcuts. And, you know, along those lines, there was, I think, a really important commentary published in Wired last week called "The Science of This Pandemic is Moving at Dangerous Speeds." The authors, one of whom is Ivan Uransky. He's the president of the Association of Healthcare Journalists and a North Carolina Health News donor. Thank you, Ivan. Talk about the, quote, dismaying and consequential example of what happens when no one bothers to engage in scientific fact-checking. So their takeaway is we need some more humility around finding answers, and we would do well to emphasize that. And they conclude that what we should be saying is there's some evidence for this now. It will likely turn out to be partially wrong. And, you know, I think reporters would do well to keep that in mind, too.
Very well said. So, switching gears a little, we've spent a lot of time focusing on this state modeling the last couple of days. And now Governor Cooper is making new regulations on social distancing in places like grocery stores. And in Charlotte, a field hospital that was planned there has been reduced in size from 3,000 beds to 600. Rose, I'm wondering where your optimism level is right now.
I guess I'm more cautious. So let's think about it. Yesterday, 730-some people died in New York in a day. So let that sink in for a minute. You know, North Carolina seems to have had some advantages. Like, one, we were able to see what was coming because other places exploded before we did. So we've been taking the time to prepare, right? And two, Governor Cooper seems to have been listening to his advisors and made some strong moves, sometimes controversial moves, right up front. And in a remarkable display of bipartisanship, folks in the General Assembly on both sides of the aisle have been largely backing him.
Yeah.
So those models rolled out by the North Carolina folks on Monday seem to indicate that we're somewhat flattening the curve, and other models seem to agree. But I think it's still way too early to take a victory lap.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we added 84 hospitalizations across the state from Monday to Tuesday, for a total of 354 hospitalizations. Then in the past day, we added another 32 more hospitalizations. So there's plenty of folks needing hospitalization. Maybe the reduction of the size of that field hospital in Charlotte that they're setting up tells us that hospitals have done a good job at emptying themselves out in preparation for a surge. And then there's also this shuttered hospital in Hamlet that they're going to be able to use to relieve some of the pressure.
Well, and that's the hospital you wrote about today, that hospital in the Sandhills in Hamlet that's sort of getting a second life treating COVID-19 patients.
Right, right. Like, so yesterday, State Emergency Director Mike Sprayberry announced that, and it's the old Sandhills Regional Medical Center in Hamlet that's in Richmond County. It was a small 49-bed hospital that was starting to go under when it was bought by First Health of the Carolinas, a small chain that's based in Pinehurst. So First Health bought Sandhills in late 2016, then closed the emergency department a couple months later, and then closed the entire facility in December 2017. And in a statement at the time, the CEO of First Health said they only had two or three patients a day, had an average of two surgeries a week, and fewer than seven imaging services. That's like x-rays, CT scans, and the like on a given weekday.
Mm-hmm.
And one of their other hospitals in their network was only 4 miles away. So they closed it, and this facility has been sitting there empty. There was some talk about maybe using it for the community colleges for training. After Mike Sprayberry made this announcement yesterday, I texted their spokeswoman, and I got a text back saying that the facility would be used to house, quote, non-acute and non-COVID-19 patients. She also said that as per their agreement with the state, quote, the state would provide all staff, supplies, and equipment. The center will not be used as a homeless shelter or care center for infectious disease patients. So I think what that does is it leaves open space for folks who are in the recovery phase of their COVID infection. There's going to be people who need physical therapy or whose lungs are pretty well damaged from their infections that they won't be able to go right home. Anyway, there's an additional 49 beds or more that the state just got a hold of.
Rose Hoban is the editor of NorthCarolinaHealthNews.org. Hang tight, more in a moment. This would be a good time to say thanks to everyone who supports WUNC. Whether you're an individual donor or a business, we can't say thank you enough for providing us with the resources and opportunity to serve our community and the state of North Carolina with up-to-the-minute news and information. Everyone at WUNC is working around the clock to do just that at this unique and perilous moment in our history. And we couldn't do that without your help. So thanks, and if you're able, please go to WUNC.org if you want to donate for the first time or to perhaps increase your pledge. Last week, the Biltmore House in Asheville furloughed 2,200 workers. And yesterday, we got word that another iconic tourist destination on the other end of the state canceled its season.
It's the greatest mystery in the history of America. A tale of adventure, drama, and struggle. A spectacular production performed on the very spot where the story occurred. The Lost Colony comes to life on Roanoke Island.
The Lost Colony has put on summer performances every year since 1944. But without a chance to hire a cast and with all the other unknowns, the Manio-based production could not commit to starting its 83rd season on June 1st. The play's board of directors says the grandfather of all outdoor dramas will return in 2021. That's it for this episode of Tested. I'm Dave DeWitt. Lindsay Foster Thomas is our executive producer. Brent Wolf is WUNC's news director. Thanks for listening. See you tomorrow.